Geekville Radio.
Hello again, all you geeks and geekettes. This is Seth, a.k.a. Xandrax, the mayor of Geekville and the host of Geekville Radio. We've got a very special show lined up here. It actually might be the first of a couple of shows, because as we record this on June 12th, the year of our Lord 2019, the E3 is still going on. Yeah, but we're going to talk E3, the games that have caught our eye or ear or internet interest and such. And fortunately, I don't have to do it alone. Rejoining the Geekville Radio airwaves, my co-host for tonight, Crazy Train himself, Jonathan Bullock.
All aboard, ladies and gentlemen. So it's going to be a whole show just dedicated to a whole lot of video games. But funny the way video games are nowadays, it's going to kind of cross the stream, so to speak, because so many of them are based on intellectual properties that are already geek to begin with, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And much like the San Diego Comic-Con, it seems E3's kind of become mainstream in itself, meaning you'll see mainstream news cover it, entertainment and such, and we'll show some of the reasons why I'm saying that in a moment. So I guess we'll just kind of alternate. I'll start off, and then I can throw to you for whatever one you want to talk about, and we'll just go till we run out of games. Does that sound cool?
That sounds like a plan to me.
Okay, well, I will start off with my pick that I don't think anybody who knows me would be surprised at, and that's the Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. They originally announced this game at last year's E3, and it was still in its beginning stages, so they didn't have any gameplay footage, and they didn't even really have any trailer that they could do. I think if there's one thing, they had like a teaser of just Jedi Fallen Order, you know, coming into the screen, and that's all they had. But now, 1 year later, not only do we have a trailer, we have some game footage, and it does look to me like it's going to play similar to Force Unleashed, which is fine. I think we both love the Force Unleashed game. And there's three things in this that I find interesting. You know, some are serious and some are, you know, a little kooky, and in my opinion, a little goofy. The first one, obviously, this takes place shortly after Episode 3, the Revenge of the Sith. The Jedi Purge is still in full force. And joining the cast of this game, we have Saw Gerrera, who we saw meet his demise in Rogue One. And according to IMDb, it is actually Forrest Whitaker voicing the character again. Now, he's obviously a lot younger, because we're talking 20 years before Rogue One. I think it's kind of cool that they went to that extra step to get Forrest for it. The other thing is, this character that you play has this droid that kind of mounts on his shoulder, like, you know, like he's a familiar that's summoned or something like that. And the main characters, at least the female character in Battlefront 2, had the same gimmick. She had her trusty little robot over her shoulder that she could usher off and do, you know, things you'd summon a familiar to do. And so I don't know what you thought of the trailer, Train, or if you had any idea about it.
No, I mean, I never finished Force Unleashed. I played, you know, about halfway through. I liked it, but I got into other games. I'll probably check it out. I don't know if it's one I'm going to buy on release. I probably will wait until I can pick up a used copy cheap from GameStop or online or something like that. But, I mean, it's Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars geek, and it's a video game. I like video games, so go figure.
Right. And one other thing I almost forgot to mention, one of the Force powers that you have in this is that gimmick of slowing down the blaster bolt or stopping it. So it seems like that's going to be like the new cool gimmick for all the Force users to use.
Well, was that the coolest thing in The Force Awakens? I mean, everybody's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Darth Vader never did that. Obi-Wan never did that. You know, that's kind of my thought.
Right. Now, of course, I will reserve judgment until I play a demo or play the game and such, but I liked what I saw so far. So, Train, did you have anything you wanted to talk about? Why don't you talk about, we can stay in the Star Wars universe here. You saw the Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga, right?
Yeah, which I think is, obviously it's more like of a packaging marketing ploy. I love the Lego games. Most of our listeners know that. I talk about those video games all the time. I already had bought a package digitally called Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga, which was essentially the three prequels and the three originals in order, you know, the Lego game versions of them. And so looks to me like it's those, plus they're adding on Force Awakens and The Last Jedi.
Yeah, yeah, the sequel trilogy, you might say.
Yeah, it would be the Skywalker saga because, you know, Luke dies, you know, spoiler alert for a movie that's over a year old. Luke dies at the end of The Last Jedi. Yeah, that kind of is the end of the saga. I mean, they're Lego games. They're fun. They're simple. Some of the puzzle solving can be difficult when you consider these games are supposed to be geared for like kids, you know, but I'm sure that at some point I'll get it. Mostly because I've played them, but I don't own copies of the Lego versions of The Last Jedi and Force Awakens. I don't. So, like I said, I bought a package that has the first six, but not those two. It's a marketing ploy, you know. I mean, and we've talked about Star Wars as an intellectual property before. Like you like to say all the time, now that Disney's got a hold of it, you ain't seen nothing yet compared to what George did with milking it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just an example of that. How long until, you know, Lego decides, you know, three or four movies down the road, 8-10 years from now, let's repackage another one. It's going to include all these plus other stuff. It is what it is, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be surprised if they didn't do that. Now, one other thing, the next game I'd like to talk about, and I'll have the trailers for all the games that we're talking about here. If you haven't seen them already, just go to geekvilleradio.com/236. That's where I'm going to have the show notes for this episode, if it doesn't appear in the podcast device of your choosing. One thing that really kind of turned people on their ears, so to speak, figuratively, of course, is Cyberpunk 2077. Now, obviously, Cyberpunk's been a genre now for probably 30, almost 40 years now, and it goes with what we were talking before about getting Forrest Whitaker to voice a game. They actually got Keanu Reeves to appear in this game. I don't know if he had motion capture or if they just made it look like him, but clearly he's the star of the game, so to speak. It looks like he's not the character you play as. Like Saw Gerrera, it looks like he's going to be the character you interact with the most. But, I mean, Keanu Reeves is an A-lister in anybody's book, you know. So I think it's kind of right. A sign of how mainstream these gaming things have gotten. You know, not only do you see the E3 covered mainstream media, we're getting mainstream actors to take part in these games. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I think this has been the video game industry has been going this way for several years now. There was, I cannot remember the name of that game that came out a few years ago, where the main character looked like and was, you know, rendered to look like and voiced by Norman Reedus, who, of course, was in the middle of, I mean, that was when Walking Dead was as hot as it gets, and he was arguably the most popular character on the show. There was I can't remember if it was a DLC or an expansion pack or if it was a standalone game, but I think it was a COD game, a Call of Duty game, Modern Warfare, one of those, where Kevin Spacey was voiced and the character looked like him. Of course, that's not going to happen now, but I digress. Don't want to speak ill. Kevin's got enough problems. He doesn't need us ragging on him. But it's, I think that's just the way they're going, you know, and it's, I've talked all for a long time that the video game market is kind of the new frontier for the young up and coming creative artists and writers, because it just is. If you're not going comic books, you're going into video games, because you're just not seeing it in television and movies, in my opinion, much anymore, as far as like, you know, new, fresh blood. So another game that you know, I'm sure you'll put link the trailer to that was similar to that. I don't know if I'll play it, even though it's a popular franchise, Ghost Recon, which is one of the Tom Clancy games. They've got John Barenthal playing a character in it, or, you know, voicing a character, and the character looks like John Barenthal, the way he was. Like you said, I don't know if it's mocap. That one really makes sense. I mean, we both love his Punisher, so a Tom Clancy Ghost Recon game kind of fits what we see as John Barenthal. I think Cyberpunk for Keanu works because of Johnny Mnemonic, because of The Matrix, and then you throw in all the stuff he's done recently with John Wick, you know, so having him as an action hero in a video game, or a character that looks like him, makes sense, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, I wonder, with this being called Cyberpunk 2077, if it's any relation to the role-playing, you know, the tabletop role-playing game in the 90s called Cyberpunk 2020 that I never played, but I had some friends that did. It would make sense now that we're a year away from 2020 that they might, you know, move the game farther into the future.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, one of my favorite movies is Escape from New York. You know, I'm a John Carpenter fan. Of course, if you go back and watch that movie, the events are supposed to take place in 1997. That's 22 years ago now. And we're like, that never happened. We never cordoned off New York, Manhattan, and made it a prison. But, you know, that's right. Anyway.
Well, moving on. Was there another game you wanted to talk about? I think it'd be your turn, then, right?
Sure. We'll talk about Lego still. I found this fascinating. I'm not a fan of racing games. I have a hard time getting down the mechanics of driving a vehicle with a controller. But the Forza games, which are Xbox exclusives, are, you know, very popular titles on the Xbox, and they're beautiful. I think more than just the racing stuff, the real world locations that they pick for the games and then how they render them are just gorgeous, you know? And they pick very scenic, you know, like I think the latest one was the English countryside, and they've done like the deserts of Africa, and they've done like the Rocky Mountain. I mean, just beautiful, awe-inspiring, breathtaking. But Forza 4, I think it came out like 2 years ago, is the latest Forza title. So when this trailer drops, it looks like, okay, this is going to be Forza 5. This must be the Forza 5 trailer. And, you know, it looks like a regular video game. It looks like the Forza video game. And then you hear softly moving closer to you the Everything is Awesome song from the Lego movie. And then here comes all these Lego cars zipping past the rendered regular-looking car. And I'm going, where the hell are they going with this? And it's a Forza 4, but Lego version of it. I'm going, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, Lego is going to just dip into every intellectual property. Lego has become this monster company and doesn't have to create anything. They just have to borrow everybody else's intellectual property and turn it into a kid's toy. And I mean, it looks cute. It looks like another fun Lego. I don't know if I'll play this like I will the Star Wars Lego, because two things. One, I'm not a big fan of driving games, like I said. And two, I especially hate the driving mechanics in previous Lego games. I mean, I'm hoping, even though I'm probably going to play it, that maybe they will talk to the people who, and I cannot remember the studio that developed the Forza franchise. They'll work with their designers and engineers and use assets from their engine so that the game playing mechanics of driving are a little bit better than what they are in a normal Lego game. It kind of would seem to me, even though it's a Lego game, it's still a driving game, and to have really, really wonky driving mechanics is kind of defeating the purpose, but we'll see, you know. I'm sure it'll make tons of money because, well, Lego's popular and Forza's popular. You combine the two, it's going to make money. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, fun trailer, though, with the little wink-wink to the Lego movie song. I was, all right.
right. And, you know, there's the inevitable people will crash their car just so they can see the bricks go everywhere and then probably reassemble by themselves.
Probably. I mean, and that's the other thing, too, is I don't know how. How do you build stuff unless like you're saying, you wreck your car and then you rebuild it? I mean, that's a key component to all the other Lego games, whether it's the Indiana Jones or Harry Potter or Star Wars, whatever. You break stuff and then rebuild it to things you use to solve the puzzles. How do you do that in a driving game? I don't know. It's Lego. They'll figure it out and they'll make a gazillion dollars off of it. So I'm gonna argue with success.
Well, speaking of a gazillion dollars, I was hooked on this trailer for this game as soon as I saw it. Now, it does say that it's rendered with the in-game engine, so I don't know if that's supposed to be like how quality gameplay is going to be, like if it's going to be that high definition, but Square Enix...
No, that's probably their caveat that this is an actual gameplay footage. This is cutscene footage. That's usually what that means. You don't play video games much, now, do you? You got to be careful these little, you know... It's essentially the video game version of objects may be closer than they appear in your mirror, you know, caveat, that kind of thing.
But of course, we're talking about Square Enix's Avengers game, and it looks like it's an original title. In fact, I believe they even confirmed it was a original title. And I did hear some of the feedback, negative feedback, about the way the game looked or the way the characters look. And I think, quite frankly, that's probably due to this not having the likenesses of the MCU actors in it. We've gotten...
Or voices.
After 10 years of the same actors being associated with the roles, it might be hard for some people to see a different face and hear a different voice. Now, it is kind of a who's who of the voice acting field with people like Troy Baker and Nolan North and all that. And I also think it's interesting, if you look closely, it looks like Taskmaster is the villain, or at least one of the villains. And it talks about how the gameplay takes place 5 years after that initial cutscene. So I don't know what it is about Avengers stories and fast forwarding 5 years, but that seems to be their real gimmick right now. But like I said, trailer had me at hello, so I'll probably get this as soon as it comes out.
I have to agree with some of the detractors. That was the first thing that stuck out to me, is not that I was disappointed, because I've played enough video games and read comic books for long enough to know that things change. I get it for the mainstream fans who don't read the comics or aren't lifelong comic readers like us. You know, for years, I never heard RDJ's voice in my head. I don't know what voice. A voice I made up is what I heard when I read Tony Stark lines. You know, right. Now that he's become synonymous, that's what I hear when I read the comics. But for a lot of people, that is Iron Man is Robert Downey Jr. You know, Nick Fury is Samuel L. Jackson. They didn't have the history that you and I and others like us do. So I get that. But I still thought it was odd from a marketing standpoint that they wouldn't go a little closer to the movie simply because of what I'm talking about. You know, there are going to be people, and I was right, because like you said, there's a bit of a furor online already of people going, wait a second, this ain't the Avengers is Scarlett Johansson, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Hemsworth, you know what I'm saying? You know,
right.
That's the event, and they're not getting that. And I still think it's going to sell a lot because the video game, it looks good. Square Enix is a AAA development studio. So I think it'll be fine. It's still a strong property. I just wonder if some people, they might be missing out on some of the mainstream people or casual gamers that might have picked it up before. Because I do think video gaming and comic books are two areas of entertainment that have a lot of crossover in their fan base. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, it's still Marvel. It's the Avengers. It's going to sell. I just wonder if, you know, maybe they knew that going into it and said, so we lose 10 or 15,000 potential buyers. You know, we're still going to sell, you know, what, 10 gazillion copies at launch of this game. So what do we care? You know, I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But
yeah, as far as gameplay goes, they did say that you can do 4 players online. I'm assuming it's a linear story, or maybe there's some differences here and there, but it looks like it's going to be similar to the Ultimate Alliance games. The other thing that I think is really good, and this is probably, I don't know if PR is the word, but I think they're trying to score points with the fandom, because they did announce at the unveiling that future DLC will be free. So you won't have to rely on paying 10 or 15 bucks every 2 months to get cool in the game.
Right, and I noticed they even announced some of the forthcoming DLCs. Right, the first one I think was Marvel Knights, and the second was the X-Men. Maybe that has to do with the whole Disney Fox merger. I don't know, or maybe it is just that carrot dangled on a stick. But the fact that it's free DLC, I think every gamer's down with that. You know, who doesn't want something free?
Right. So we'll throw to you then, Train. I know we both wanted to talk about this game, so we'll do it here. Speaking of Ultimate Alliance, we are getting an Ultimate Alliance 3, except for it's in Switch only.
Nintendo Switch, yeah. Let's talk about that first. I mean, it's kind of weird in today's world when it's a big title like that, especially a sequel to now, granted, Marvel Alliance and Marvel Alliance 2 were old-gen consoles. I think I played both of those on, like, PlayStation 2, you know, not even 3. So that's how long ago it was. I think I played Marvel Ultimate Alliance 1 on PlayStation 2, and I think I played Alliance 2 on Xbox 360, I think. Correct me on that. It seems odd in today's world, unless there's an exclusivity deal, which I know Marvel does not have an exclusivity deal, that a major title like that would only drop on one platform. Don't you find that odd?
Yeah, it does. You know, like you said, it's such a hot commodity that I would think they would have at least made it available online as a download for purchase in like a Xbox or PlayStation store.
Right. Now, I do know a lot of popular titles that Nintendo got left out on for various reasons. Sometimes we've talked about before, Nintendo tends to be more family and kid oriented than either Sony or Microsoft worry about with PlayStation and Xbox. So, you know, there have been a lot of games that Nintendo, whatever their current console, didn't get, but it was ported to it a year later. Do you see a possibility that if this is successful on Switch, then porting it to Xbox and PlayStation?
I'd be surprised if they didn't.
You know, I'm not a coder. I don't code. I'm not a computer programmer. I don't know how difficult that is. I'm sure that it that it is, there's some difficulty involved in it, but I don't think it would, I don't think it's like building a nuclear bomb for the first time either, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, it's, I don't know about you, but as far as the Ultimate Alliance stuff goes, before the Arkham series came around for Batman, I thought the Marvel Ultimate Alliance franchise was the best comic book adaptation into video game.
I agree. Yeah.
I especially loved the second one where you had the power-up moves. You remember that, where you could you both charge up your stuff, and if you get different team moves depending on the characters you had in your party.
Right. And I think you can do that in this game as well.
Yeah, it looks like. I think, like you said, it's looks like it's going to be a cooperative game where you can play online with your friends, and that's, you know, that's pretty popular in video games now. I mean, that goes all the way back to like World of Warcraft, you know, and the MMORPGs, where people could be cooperative. I mean, it's, I lament as an old fart that some of these new kids are making friends and relationships virtually who've never met each other. But for transparency's sake, you and I have never met in real life either. We've been doing this for what, 4 years now? Right, so, yeah. I mean, but the wonderful world of social media and electronic stuff, but you know, it is what it is. I did notice it seemed from the trailer, the characters in this game are going to be a lot of the current takes in the comic books on some of these classic characters. It looked like the Miles Morales Spider-Man. It was the Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right. And I think the clip that I saw had Jessica Jones in it, and she was dressed like the Kristen Ritter character would.
Right. As opposed to the Jewel from the 1980s and 90s that we would see in the comics. I guess that's one of the reasons I love the Lego Marvel games, is that it gives you both versions. You know, you can play the classic or the, but I mean, I understand if you're wanting to go for that dreaded word synergy between what's currently in the comics or in other media and the video game, it only makes sense to do that.
Any other game you wanted to talk about next?
Well, okay, we'll jump into the horror world for a little bit. I'm not going to talk a lot about this game, but I did notice there was a trailer for Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. I never even played Bloodlines 1. I did play the tabletop Vampire the Masquerade role-playing game back in the 90s. It was always a very weird role-playing game, and it seems to me, based on the trailer here, the character, it's first-person perspective, and it seems like an action RPG, which a lot of games are kind of that now, you know? And it seems weird to me. It seems like it has a linear story and it's a solo play. It doesn't look like there was any cooperative online play. It just seemed weird to me that one of the cool parts of the role-playing game when it came out was that there are all these different vampire clans. And in your character creation, you can create your character to have a different clan, and different clans have different strengths and weaknesses, different vampire abilities, and they have a different look, especially a clan called Nosferatu, which looks like, you know, the old Max Schreck Nosferatu from the 1922 silent film, you know, with the pointy ears. And they're the only clan that can't really blend in with humans because they are so grotesque looking. It seems like here you're getting chose from the jump what you're going to be. You're kind of stuck with the character they put you in. And I would think, me personally, based on having played the role-playing game, that's going to kind of hurt them. You know, one of the joys is you can pick. I mean, that's like, I know with the Force Unleashed game, and I think Knights of the Old Republic video game, there were like, what, 8 or 10 different races you could choose to be your Jedi? Isn't that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And some were better than others, you know.
Right. I mean, I think Wookiee was even one of the races you could choose, you know. Doesn't look like you're going to have that here. And I'm like, you might be hurting yourself. But, you know, it's a horror game, and it's a horror franchise that I'm somewhat familiar with. So I'll probably check it out once it gets used. You know, I'll pick it up online used. I'm not going to buy it new, but we'll see. We'll see.
One that caught my eye, and I think it caught yours as well, just because of the blending of gameplay and environment, is Empire of Sin. That totally came out of left field for me. It looks like it's that 20s. Gangster Al Capone type thing, but judging from the gameplay, it looks like it plays like Ultimate Alliance games. I think that's pretty cool. I don't know anything else much about the game other than that, but it was enough to make me at least want to try it. I mean, did you get the same vibe?
Yeah, I like, and I love period stuff. I mean, obviously my favorite game of all time is Red Dead Redemption, so I'm fine with period pieces in a video game. I guess the closest would probably be that Rockstar game, what was it, about 8-10 years ago, LA Noir. that for whatever reason didn't really catch on, but it's a cool concept. You know, LA, you know, you're homicide detectives in Los Angeles, I think in the late 40s, early 50s, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably play Empire of Sun. I might play a demo first, and if I like it, then I'll pick it up. But it definitely intrigued me for sure.
What was your next pick?
We'll stay in the surprise for all our listeners. I'm gonna stay in the horror genre. The next game that really caught my eye really quickly was Zombie Army 4: Dead War. And let me give you I'll go into this a little bit more on this game.
Yeah, because I'd never Zombie even heard of the first three.
Zombie Army Trilogy was an original game, and what it actually was is, are you familiar with the Sniper Elite franchise?
I've heard the name.
Once again, it's a period piece. You play Sniper during World War II. He's a German of Jewish descent. His mother's British and his father's American, or maybe it's flipped. The main character is. And there was that period in video game, and it was successful. I think there have been like three or four of them. And most experts, and I'm talking, when I say experts, I mean military guys, have said that it's the best. The mechanics in Sniper Elite games were the best real-to-life sniper mechanics they'd ever seen in a video game. Because depending on the difficulty setting, your breathing, wind, elevation, distance all affect the trajectory of your bullet, which is very realistic to long-distance shooting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And but there was that period about 12, 15 years ago, you'll remember, that every popular video game got a DLC that was zombies. Remember that period?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Sniper Elite was no different. They got a zombie one that was about this. It's the end of World War II. Hitler realizes the Nazis are losing, so he finds some old relics and reanimates his fallen troops. And now you have to fight zombie Nazis. Okay. Zombies are always bad guys. Nazis are always bad guys. Can you go wrong by combining the two and making them Nazi zombies? And right. There were like five chapters. They were short, you know, get from one point to another, and then it progresses to the next chapter. And it had a linear story. It was successful. So then they made a second DLC for the next game that continued the storyline along. And there were three of them in all, and they were all so popular that after they had been released as DLC, they were combined, repackaged, and sold. I don't believe you could buy a disc. I think that came later on, but originally they were packaged together as a standalone game that you could buy online, in the PlayStation Store and the Xbox Store. And they named it Zombie Army Trilogy. And there's actually a linear storyline in it, you know, from one to the other. And that's why it's called Trilogy, because it's the combination of three separate DLCs, you know, and it's a fun game. It can be very difficult on the higher levels because of the real life, you know, sniping mechanics. I find it interesting because I play a lot of zombie games, and you don't, when you think of fighting a zombie, the last thing you think of is a sniper rifle, mm-hmm. but that is the main weapon you use because it's a sniper game, and these are period sniper weapons. I usually use the M1 Garand, if you're familiar with that. That's an old World War II era. There's like a
semi-automatic.
It's semi-automatic. I can tell that the sound guys actually went and recorded, because I've shot a real Garand. It has a 5-round clip, and when you pop the clip out, it makes this ping sound because it's spring loaded. That sound is actually in the game every time your character reloads. I'm like, well, they went to a shooting range and taped that and put it into the soundtrack. But the reason it has such a soft place in my heart is a little backstory for our listeners. I bought an Xbox One simply because Arkham was my favorite game franchise. And when Rocksteady announced that the last entry in that franchise, Arkham Knight, was only going to be released on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, I was like, well, crap, I guess I'm going to get an Xbox One. So I did. I bought it just to play that one game. Well, I got the console before that title actually came out, and I wanted to play around and get used to my Xbox One. So that was the first game I ever bought on Xbox One, was Zombie Army Trilogy. I bought it for like, it was on sale for like $20 from the store. And it's also the first video game I ever bought as a digital download. And I played the heck out of it. And it does have cooperative. You can play, there's the solo mission where you have AI bots helping you fight the zombies, but you can also play online too and have up to four players cooperative. The reason it really caught my eye is there's a pretty conclusive ending to the game. Well, sort of. At the end of the game, Hitler himself gets killed at the start of the second level. Zombies overtake the Führer bunker, which was a real place. That's where we found his body when we and the Russians and the British all, you know, stormed upon Berlin at the end of World War II. That's a real place. But in the game, it's alternate timeline. The undead attack him, and he becomes a zombie himself. And he's leading this undead army. And you actually kill zombie Hitler, spoiler alert, at the end of the game. But a major part of this trailer, it shows him again. So maybe we didn't kill. I mean, it's video game. It's like a comic book. They're never dead till they're dead, right?
Right.
Plus, you're dealing with zombies. These are not a chemical zombie like 28 Days Later either. This is old school supernatural zombies. There is, you know, lots of occult and religious symbolism all throughout the game that Hitler's using to reanimate these corpses. So it is very horror based in that regard, you know. So it's a nice blend of horror and a shooter, a first person shooter. It does look like from the trailer that they're going to have a Japanese character and an African character, which makes sense because in the original Zombie Army trilogy, you had British, French, German, and Russian characters. And it's essentially the North American and the Europeans that were involved in World War II because the zombies have overtaken. And so now the people that were against each other that are human have banded together to just fight the zombie menace, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you even can have a Japanese sniper rifle as one of the weapons you can choose, but there's no Japanese characters. Well, it makes sense. Japan was involved in World War II, so maybe they're going to bring in those areas as well. You know, I'm a fan of World War II. I'm a fan of zombie stuff. I like killing Nazis and I like killing zombies because it's just quite relaxing. Because, I mean, it is what it is, you know, and so I'm looking very forward to it. I will definitely buy that game probably when it first comes out. And they're just fun. You know, I mean, it's not if you want to make it challenging, you can really jack up the difficulty. But if you just want to sit back and kill a bunch of Nazi zombies, you can hike down the difficulty and do that for hours. And, you know, it sounds weird, but 30 minutes of that can be quite therapeutic. I'm sure you understand.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What I'll have for my next pick, and there's actually two games coming out under the title. There's a new Contra game, and I think there's one that's like Classics or something like that. It looks like it's an update of the original side-scrollers. I thought it was funny, and this doesn't like make or break the game or anything, but the song used in the trailer, I'm assuming it's in the game, but it doesn't have to be, is the famous Twisted Sister, "We're Not Gonna Take It." You know, it's not a cover or a redo or anything. It really sounds like it's that 80s version.
Well, didn't Schwarzenegger use that as his theme song when he was campaigning for governor of California?
That could be.
Believe me, D. Schneider, who of course owns the rights to the song because he wrote it, pretty sure he's not above collecting a checker here too. Here, somebody
right,
wants
right.
to use it.
Right. But the gameplay looks like it's a 3D scroller instead of side scrolling, so it's more like, you know, like a Tomb Raider or something like that, where it's third person, but it's very much played like a first-person type.
Does it seem open world? Like there's areas you could just get that aren't, you know, you get a free roam and you can just go and explore when you want in between missions and stuff? Or can you not tell from the trailer?
Judging from the trailer, it looked like that's what you could do because people were just kind of going in all directions. And it looks like you can, well, it wouldn't be a Contra game without powering up weapons, but I don't know if it's going to be one of those flying footballs that, you know, you shoot, but it looks like you can mix and match people with weapons, which I'm sure means some have certain bonuses with weapons that others don't.
Am I the only person that played the old Contra game that couldn't figure out how in the heck they didn't get sued by the people that own Alien, the movie franchise? Because that's obvious
right.
what it was a ripoff on. Still a fun game, though. One of my favorite old school games.
What's also funny, you talk about the lawsuit, you know, being like some, those two characters, clearly one was a parody of Arnold Schwarzenegger and the other one was clearly a parody of Sylvester Stallone. So, you know.
Yes. Yeah. One was Rambo and one was a Terminator. Yeah.
Right.
The 80s. What a great time.
Oh, yeah.
We've said it before. If you didn't grow up in the 80s, you guys don't know what you're missing.
Well, what was next on your list?
This one, I've talked about this game before, but I'll talk a little about Destiny 2. All our listeners know I've played both Destiny 1 and Destiny 2. At certain times, I've been very dedicated to it. I've gotten lax as of late. Once Red Dead Redemption 2 came out back in the fall, and I called this, they were going to lose me, and they did. And I haven't really played Destiny 2 since then. So I think they've had two or three DLCs drop since I've played it. I played the first DLC for Destiny 2, which was called the Forsaken, which was great, by the way. But I haven't played it since. But it seems to me this was a trailer for the fall called Shadowkeep. And it's they're returning back to the places and space you haven't been able to go to in Destiny 2, but were locations you could go to in Destiny 1. And one of the major NPCs from Destiny 1, Eris Morn, this looks like the game is going to be her return. And if you've been following the storyline in Destiny 2, even though I haven't played them, I've still online and through social media followed the storyline because the lore fascinates me. It was inevitable. This was coming. You knew it was coming. Looks like you're going to be going back to the moon, which you haven't been able to go to the moon in Destiny 2 yet. So if you know Destiny lore, that means the Hive, which are the most horror-based of all the enemies that you fight. They essentially worship death. And it looks like you're going to have to go back in the Hellmouth, which the second raid ever in the game in Destiny 1 was called the Dark Below, and it was in the Hellmouth. It looks like you're going back there. So that's cool. This is a game. Now Bungie completely controls. They have severed their ties with Activision. So they do all the developing and distribution of the game. I think a lot of hardcore fans felt that was going to help. We'll see. I probably will get back into Destiny 2 by the time this expansion drops. I'll probably start playing it in a couple months, get caught up, go ahead and purchase all the DLC I haven't played yet and get caught up, at least so that my character's where it needs to be level-wise and gear-wise so I won't get destroyed. And I'll let you know. But it's one thing I don't like about Destiny, and it's been one of the few things I don't like about the game. Bungie has always pushed hard for cooperative online multiplayer. And I'm a 48-year-old father who has a regular job and does all these podcasts. I don't have the time, energy, or patience to try to get online and find a whole bunch of people to play with, especially ones in their 20s who don't even talk the same language I do. And that's the main demographic. So that is a drawback. But I've always been able to do about as much as a single player can do in Destiny. There are certain in-game things that are usually blocked in those because I don't play a lot of cooperative. But, hey, I enjoyed the heck out of the first one and the second one until I stopped being essentially a solo player. So it's possible. You know, we'll see.
Well, my next pick is Wolfenstein Youngblood. I mean, we've been hearing about Wolfenstein 3 for like ever now, and I have been a fan of the Wolfenstein games dating all the way back to the Apple II when it was, you know, walking around as a stick figure and such. But the official timeline of the game, like as far as where it stands in continuities, they're looking to it as a prelude or a prequel to Wolfenstein 3, and it takes place in the 80s, and you play as B.J. Blankowitz's daughters. And once again, it's an alternate reality where Nazis won World War II and you're fighting against the Nazi regime in this alternate universe. But you almost can't go wrong. That might be stressing a little bit. I mean, first off, that means killing more Nazis. But
heck yeah.
These classic first-person shooters, it almost seems like it can't go wrong as long as the gameplay is good.
Yeah. A lot of people forget Wolfenstein. Once they developed the game, and it's an old franchise, it goes all, like I said, back to the 80s on the PC stick figure, you know, where you're trying to, it was basically a maze crawler. Remember, you were trying to get away from the Nazi guards?
Right.
And that terrible voice rendering they had in the 80s made the guards saying Achtung sound like hot dog, which is kind of an inside joke.
Halt.
Yeah.
Come and see.
Yeah. I mean, they even made an Easter egg in one of the DLCs for the first game called The Old Blood about hot dog, just because of that. That's how long this game's been around since the 80s, you know. But when they updated it the first time in the 90s, people tend to forget it actually was developed about 6 months before Doom. So it kind of created the whole first person shooter genre. It and the original Doom did, you know. And as a matter of fact, Doom, because they're developed by the same the same development team. A lot of people don't know this. Doom and Wolfenstein are actually in the same universe. It's a shared universe. The main character from Doom, which of course is a game in the future, is like the great, great, great grandson of BJ Blazkowicz, the main hero from Wolfenstein. So, I mean, we've talked about before, we both kind of like shared universes when they're done right. It's kind of just cool. It's a fan service thing. I think Bethesda, the game was kind of dead, but then when Bethesda got the rights to develop and publish it, and they came out with New Order, I think it was 2014, and created this new timeline that you're talking about, I really think that's when the game really found its stride, because it was still a period piece, but it wasn't all just set in World War II. You had the last two games were set in the 60s, you know, and it's just and the mechanics are cool, because BJ is, you know how we talk about all the time, Ash Williams is terrible at everything but killing deadites.
Mm-hmm.
BJ Blazkowicz is terrible at everything but killing Nazis. that's like his call. It's like his calling in life, you know. And of course, with today's graphics, it is this massively over the top, you know, stylized violence. Nobody can dual wield these massive semi-automatic shotguns that he does, you know, but it's a video game, you know, and it's fun. And I will definitely be getting this. And it looks like from the trailer, the daughters have the superpower suits that are ancient Jewish tech that BJ uses at the first half of the second game, New Colossus. So I'll definitely play this game. I'll love it. I know I will. I love all the Wolfenstein games. One of the reasons I like Wolfenstein games, I cuss them and I yell and I throw my controller, but they are a little bit more realistic than most shooters. Destiny is a great example. I love Destiny, but if you build your character right, you can tank a lot of damage before you start realizing, oh crap, I'm getting shot. That doesn't happen in Wolfenstein games. You will realize, you'll be walking around and not realize that you're getting picked away from a distance by somebody, and then you're dead. And then when you're taking heavy fire, you know really quick. I mean, and let's be honest, the human body's not meant to take bullets, so that's much more realistic, you know? And I think all Wolfenstein games at some point, if you're a dedicated Wolfenstein player, and I am, at some point when you first play a game, you get so frustrated, you're like, screw this, quit trying to figure out the map, just dual-wield shotguns and run around like a chicken with your head cut off and hope you don't take enough damage before you kill everybody on the level. That's what it devolves to sometimes. But that can be fun, you know. Mm-hmm. And so and it does look like there's going to be some stealth in this. They started incorporating more stealth with the last game. So I think a blend of stealth missions and shooting missions are always fun, you know. Gives us something, a different challenge, and something, some people like the more action, some people like the stealth, so it gives something to everybody.
What did you have on your list next?
It's actually another expansion pack, another DLC. Was it just me, or did it seem like a lot of the stuff this year was more DLCs than actual games, or was it, you know, well, more than normal? Am I wrong in feeling that way?
No, not at all. One of the things I was going to bring up, might as well bring it up now, the Smash Brothers, I mean, they got expansions coming out for that now.
Right. I think that's the new thing in video games. It's that cradle to grave kind of mentality that a business owner, Vince McMahon, has said that's what he tries to do with the WWE, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's what these video game companies are doing. They're trying to create, it's a way of extending the life of a game. I mean, look at Minecraft. Because of the mods that people can do, that game's well outlived as long as it should have, and still's a major moneymaker, you know? So expansion packs, stuff like that are always going to, I think, be a way to make a game have a longer shelf life than it should. God knows for how long it's kept Elder Scrolls alive, you know? But anyway, the next one is called State of Decay 2, Homeland. It's a DLC. Like you would think from the title, it is a sequel. The State of Decay is a zombie game. I played the original one and the year one anniversary edition. I've played the second one, which is a little bit more cooperative. It's a zombie game. It's only available on Xbox, by the way. It's developed by a company called Undead Labs, which was several people from other major game studios who left their studios with the sole intent of creating horror games, thus the name Undead Labs. And State of Decay was the only game they ever developed before the company kind of got absorbed by I think Microsoft might have bought it. But regardless, why I like the State of Decay games is that unlike Left 4 Dead or Dying Light or Dead Island or Dead Space or you know Resident Evil, which are somewhat linear games where you go through Zombie Army Trilogy, for that matter. You go through and kill a bunch of zombies to get to a safe room and then move on. That's kind of the way it's always been in zombie games. Not with this one. This one's all about, instead of fighting, it's about developing a community and figuring out a way to collect resources and how long can you hold out in an outbreak. That's essentially the mechanics of this game. And if you figure the mechanics out, you can survive indefinitely because you have the ability to create your own, build your own generators and then grow corn to create your own biodiesel and make your own medicines and explosives. I mean, it isn't just scavenging. Once you get a home base and you fortify it and you get the right kind of player characters in the base, you can live indefinitely. But Homeland, it seems from the trailer, is taking you back to the setting of the first game, which is Trumbull Valley. It's like up in the mountains of Colorado is where the first, and the first character you play as, who, one of the things about the state of Kagan's is permadeath. Once you die, that character, you can't bring that character back. You just, the game switches you over to another character in your camp. And, this character became a fan favorite, and his name was Marcus. And he became a fan favorite, and most players I know would fight hard to make sure he didn't get killed and that he was one of the characters you had at the end. I think this is his family looking for him about a week or so after the outbreak, it seems to me from the trailer. I'll see once I get it. But it'll be interesting to go back to Trumbull Valley and to all these places I played 8 years ago in the original game. Looks like, you know, they're, that was on the Xbox 360, so these are going to be, you know, the same maps, but rendered for 4X, you know, high definition. So that'll be fun. You know, let's see what happens.
It's funny that you should mention, you know, remakes or updates and such, because there was a much hyped trailer for Final Fantasy VII that they're, you know, they're remaking. And I'm not a huge Final Fantasy player. I understand it, though. Most of the games that I played, I think I played like one and some of three on the NES. But I remember talk about Final Fantasy VII being remade like forever, and I think there might have been a fan that was trying to do it or something to that effect. Well, now we have something that is a true blue remake, and I'm kind of struggling to think, why would you want to do that? And, you know, I'm not saying this to be mean. I'm not saying they're wrong to do this. I'm not quite sure what the appeal is, unless maybe there's like going to be like bonus content. Actually, probably be surprised if it doesn't have it, but you know, this remaking a video game that's probably still going to have the same story and the same ending, I'm not quite sure if this is something people will go for yet. But if you're going to do it, you know, Final Fantasy VII is one of the top selling games of all time, so I guess I can see if you're going to do a remake, do it on that one.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Seth. I think, like you said, Final Fantasy is one of the most popular franchises ever in video games, and I think it's goes without saying that VII was by and far the most popular of all the titles. I think it had that. I never played VII, but I'm familiar a little bit with the storyline. I think that's the one where, like, about a third of the way through, the main character gets, or the one of the main characters gets killed, and it's like a permadeath, and it freaked everybody out when that happened. So maybe there's gonna be a way to save her in this one. Maybe that's something they could add, you know. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely is a popular franchise, and it's funny you would bring up a remake like that, because the last game I wanted to talk about is also a remake. Did you play Destroy All Humans about 15 years ago?
I don't think I actually played it, but I'd seen it. It was kind of like a Smash TV or Zombies Ate My Neighbors or something like that.
Right.
It looks like there was some comedy involved in it as well.
Oh, yeah. The way I always described it, there were two of them. There was Destroy All Humans, Destroy All Humans 2. And I played it on PlayStation 2. So that tells you how long ago it was, right? It was a spoof of, and at the same time an homage to, those classic 1950s sci-fi horror movies, B-movies, you know, ants, tarantula, but with an alien twist. And you play an alien who invades the Earth. And there's some adult humor in there. There's a lot of anal probes and, you know, beaming up cows to study cows. You know, the whole thing with cattle mutilation, with the UFO conspiracy theorists. So, it's a period piece. It takes place in the 50s. The second one took place in the 60s. They're remaking the first one, which, first off, it caught my eye because I loved the game back in the day. Two, I'm watching the trailer, and the trailer opens up with Rammstein as the soundtrack, which is on a headbanger. Rammstein's awesome. Du Hast. It wasn't Du Hast, which is their most famous song.
Right.
But I mean, it's Rammstein. And I mean, come on, it's that German industrial metal. You know, when you hear a Rammstein song, you know it's Rammstein. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know what I'm saying, right? And so I don't know. Once again, I'm so glad they're redoing it. I'm looking forward to playing it again because I don't have a PS2. I couldn't play it if I wanted to, you know, and they never ported it over to next gen consoles. So, yeah, I'll look forward to playing it. But it brings up an interesting question with this. And with, like you said, Final Fantasy VII, I talked about it with State of Decay 2 Homeland. They're reusing assets from the first game 8 years ago. I have talked at length before, both on mic, and you and me have talked about this in our personal conversations, and everything in Hollywood nowadays, TV and movies, are reboots, remakes, or something that's already been published, like the MCU, for example, you know. And we've both talked at length about there seems to be this dearth of creativity amongst writers in Hollywood. My counter to that for years has been, because I am a gamer, well, they're all going to the video games. They you know, if you follow video games nowadays, no matter what, you pick out any AAA title, and it's a long, overarching storyline that would essentially take up, what, 3 or 4 movies or a couple of seasons of a television show? And so that was always my argument was, well, the people they used to get to write TV and movies, they're all making the big bucks selling, you know, writing video games now. And the ones that weren't doing that were writing comic books. But now that we see these reimagining of old characters in comic books, and we especially see remakes of classic video games, I have this fear that lack of creativity is now leaking into the video game world too. Can you see where I'm going with that, or why I would feel that way?
Yeah. I think I'm with you there. And, you know, I mean, I guess new features and such. I just hope this doesn't mean we get like, I don't know, like a
Pac-Man,
a remake 2020? Of, you know, Pong or something like that, you know?
Yeah. Here's the thing. I understand that all of us were influenced by what came before us. You know, I talk about different wrestlers who I would watch to get ideas for my matches when I was wrestling in the 90s, and they were guys from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. I think that's always been a part of any creative endeavor, is you have that foundation. You got to build on the foundation and then go wherever you're going. But this isn't even that. This is like just straight out redoing stuff. And so that's kind of scares me, you know? And, there's always going to be remakes. I get that. I mean, how many times have they remade Scarface? I mean, like, was it third, three, four? Even better, how many times have they made Star is Born? This one that just got the Oscars last year, that's what, the fourth time they've remade that movie, I think? You know?
There are
certain stories like that one that can be updated and remade. But some of these, like we're talking about with Destroy All Humans or Final Fantasy VII, unless they add stuff, really all they're doing is making the same game just with better graphics, aren't they?
Yeah. You know, usually when a movie gets remade, they might touch it up or modernize it a little bit. And I can't help but think if this happens with some of these games that it might cause that negative backlash similar to, like, with Avengers, where people were expecting MCU people didn't get it. With a new game, maybe there's a feature or a type of movement or a type of attack that might not be done in the same way.
Right. And that's the only thing you can hope for, I guess. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of video games yet, so my comparison is going to be movies. And sometimes, like you said, it works. Scarface is a good example. Star is Born is a good example. They were able to update both those and make them more relevant for the current audiences. And the originals were lauded and praised and received awards, and so did the remakes. But for every one of those, there's Rob Zombie's Halloween. There's that god-awful Vince Vaughn, Anne Heche Psycho remake, you know? I guess you get my point, you know? For every one good one they do, there's 15 that absolutely suck. And I just don't want that to happen to video games. But it's a slippery slope, and we may be on that slope now, I guess it's my fear, you know?
All right, I guess we will wind things up on that note. Now, this has only been the second day of E3, so there's probably going to be more to come. We'll probably have another episode before the week is over. If you want to look us up, we're at geekvilleradio.com. If you go to geekvilleradio.com/236, you'll see the links to all these trailers and what we talked about and such. In case it's not working in the podcast device you're choosing, as I like to say, You can also find us on social media at Geekville Radio on Facebook and Twitter. You can search through really wherever great podcasts can be found. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify. We're on Spotify now. Pretty much you name it. If you do a search for Geekville Radio, you'll find at least one, if not all, of our shows. So, Train, if anybody wants to get in the horn with you about this, where can they find you?
I'm always available on Twitter at CrazyTrain_JB. We just dropped a Examining the Dead earlier this week, where we talk about Godzilla and some of the movies coming out later this year in the horror world, including the Banana Splits horror movie. What the heck? with all these horror themed games coming out that we've discussed, the next episode of Examine the Dead, I will go into some of those with more detail. If there are any that you saw trailers for coming out of E3 that we didn't mention that are horror based that you'd like us to do an in-depth look at and talk about on Examine the Dead, let us know and we'll do that.
Absolutely. And if you are on the web and you find us at Geekville Radio, you can actually reply to any of the posts in there. It doesn't require any additional sign up because it works through Discuss. So on that note, we'll wrap it up for our first look at what will probably be at least two looks at E3. And again, let us know what you think, and we'll talk to you folks again next time. Geekville Radio is not sponsored or endorsed by any product or company unless specifically stated. The views expressed by the hosts and or guests are purely their own and do not represent the views of GeekvilleRadio.com, A1-Wrestling.com, or any affiliates. Some media used on Geekville Radio is the respective copyright of its publishers, all rights reserved.